joined momentarily by Co-Chair Parnell. We will be rolling down the agenda as posted, all but House Bill 380. We will not be hearing that bill today. We'll bring that up Tuesday after I get some amendments taken care of on that one. So the first thing we have up is a report from the Senate Finance Subcommittee on the capital budget. The schedule for this capital budget, the overview by Senator Donnelly as chair of that committee this morning, will order the CS today to be drafted as if we adopt the recommendations from the subcommittee. Amendments, Monday morning at 8:30, we will start with public testimony. Amendments will be due in at 3 o'clock Monday afternoon, and we'll come back in finance at 5 o'clock to deal with the amendments and stay at it until we get done Monday evening. So with that, Senator Donnelly, I will turn the meeting over to you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, this year we utilized a subcommittee process to come up with some initial work on the capital budget proposal. For people's general information, traditionally there hasn't been a subcommittee on the capital budget. This is a new type of system that we're trying to use to maximize the use of subcommittee meetings for public testimony and for review. The subcommittee consisted of myself, Senator Torgerson, Senator Wilson, and Senator Adams. And at our final meeting, Senator Hoffman sat in on Senator Adams' behalf. The proposal from the subcommittee is to utilize $138,474,201. That's a combination of general fund, ADA funding, and Alaska Housing Finance money. And that proposal is $15,679,932 less than last year's enacted capital spending. The subcommittee report utilizes around $80 million in general funds, $18.5 million in the ADA dividend, and around $39 million in AHC funds. And that proposal is something over $33 million below the governor's requested funding level of $172 million. So the subcommittee was to assist in combining with the operating budget reductions to reach our targeted goal of $30 million. The subcommittee was faced with not only reducing the governor's, eliminating the governor's proposed multi-million dollar increases to the capital budget, but also reduce from last year's level to meet our overall target for reductions in spending. We utilized criteria similar to what we utilized last year in project evaluation, and while none of these criteria were on their own singly determinative, and we did modify somewhat from last year, they are, whether the project was life safety, health related, school education related, eligibility for unique and special federal funding sources, whether they helped meet deferred maintenance needs, whether they were essential completion of a phased project, whether they are critical administrative needs, and whether or not they had a high volume of use to maximize benefit to the maximum number of users. We also tried to avoid projects that were not actually requested by the state or where the state was being asked to pay for things that other governmental entities had requested. And that was a new criteria that we worked with this year. Also tried to, as much as possible, fund things that could reduce future operating budget expenses and assist in them, such as more efficient records keeping and case management on various levels of state government. So to stay within the funding allocation, the subcommittee simply couldn't do all the projects that were would meet those criteria, but we had to, at least we worked with some general guidelines there, trying to maximize the benefit that with the funds that we were asked to, targets we were asked to meet. So the subcommittee had no choice but to suggest the deletion of many worthy projects from the governor's initial request to reach the funding source limits that we were provided. The DOT is the STIP programs the subcommittee did not deal with. There's an ongoing problem of how to construct that portion of the capital budget with the unresolved question of whether or not we should do Garvey bonds, as the governor suggested, or just utilize the ordinary STIP process. That's a decision the subcommittee feels should be made by the full finance committee. So there's no recommendation on that. But as a starting point in the capital bill, we will utilize the governor's amended recommendation, simply because there also there's a question about whether or not they've amended the STIP already to reflect that amended number, which creates the old chicken and the egg problem of whether or not the STIP drives the budget or the budget drives the STIP. So that's a question that the subcommittee doesn't make a recommendation on. It'll be left up to us to resolve here at full committee. And that, Chairman, I guess the specifics of the proposal will speak for themselves.
The questions for Senator Donnelly. I'd like to invite up Senator Hoffman in Al's place. He has some comments that he'd like to say, get on the record about the budget and the so forth. So, Senator Hoffman, I'll turn the meeting over to you.
Well, there are two areas, I guess, that I'd like to address. The core funding that we talked about at the subcommittee level. I believe that some of the criteria that we used in prior years said that we were going to try to get as much match as possible, and it looked as though we would receive at least $1 to $1 on the core match, and those are economic development projects, and I believe that this is the first year in like 5 or 6 years that we're not using core funds. I'd like the committee to take a serious look at that. But my primary concern was that yesterday we had I'd asked several times of which document we were using. The amended version that the governor had submitted, or the original version 192, and I don't want to get into specific projects because there are so many of them, but I was under the impression, because I asked several occasions which document we were using, and it's important of which document we're starting from, because there were several projects that were deleted from the governor's amended version. And it's my understanding that the Garvey bonds have a long way to go to get passed, and there's a strong possibility that those projects will not get funded. So I'm here to say that I felt that after the meeting that we were using the original version, and there are several projects that are important, primarily in rural areas of the state. I know they were scattered throughout the state, but they should be included, and I would say that I would have objected to the version of the bill if I knew that that the Senate Bill 192 included the governor's amendments, because of the fact that I understand that that Garvey package has a long way to go. So I would and I would say that I know I asked the chairman on several occasions, and he said we were using the original version, Senate Bill 192, and not the amended version, and I asked that specifically. So I just wanted to state that, and hopefully the committee could look at the projects that fell out. They were on the SIP program for 6 years, and they were ready to be constructed this year, and it would be a shame if for these projects, many of them in rural areas of the state, but the projects throughout the state would be dropped out after waiting for 6 years and going through the process, the STIP process. I know that there's a slight chance that the Garvey bill will go, but I feel that we should look at these projects because of the process that they went through, and to make sure somehow that all of them get funded, not only the ones from rural areas of the state, but the ones from the urban areas. The additional problem that I see is that with the governor's amended, there were other projects that were added that would never even went through the STIP process. And now they're included in the bill. They've sort of leapfrogged the process of the other ones, and some of them have never showed up even on the STIP that are out 6 years from now. And it doesn't seem fair to have those projects included now if the Garvey bonds do not go You know, I think that we went through a public process to get these projects onto the STIP, and it seems a shame that somehow that they may fall through the cracks because of the adoption of one version, the amended version of Senate Bill 192, when I thought we were dealing with the clean version of 192 last night at the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman. I do have a side-by-side spreadsheet that I got this morning. I ordered it. Tracy put it together for us last night. So we, $51 million total for the committee's thoughts that the governor had moved to the garbage bonds and put $51 million of new stuff in there. And as Senator Hoffman said, some of it has not even been recognized in the STIP, although we do have an amended STIP. So we're trying to get from DOT what, if any of the stuff is in the STIP. We just had a brief conversation with folks in administration on how they'd like to handle this. Very clearly, this was done by the governor. He took it out and put one out, and then he made an amendment and put them out, and he controls that STIP process and the whole thing. This committee especially has had frustrations with the department when we put money in the budget, federal dollars, and then put the GF to match it, and then they refuse to do it because it doesn't rank high enough. They totally ignore a lot of the things that we've done. So I'm going to work on that, Senator Hoffman, as well as the Garvey bonds. You're right that there is not a decision made yet on whether or not we go forward with that. But I'm still continuing to work on it, and because of the nature of this problem, I want to have some sort of finality by Monday. So that's kind of my timeline.
Thank you for
coming up and sharing that, Senator Lehman.
Chairman, I just want to clarify one thing that Senator Hoffman said. On some of the projects, he suggested that if we didn't fund them this year, they'd drop off the list. It's my understanding on many of those, they won't actually drop off the list, but we can retain the federal funding. They just may be delayed for a year or so, while the federal funding may still be available. Do you have a different understanding?
Well, I don't have a different understanding. The problem that I see is that these projects have been on the STIP. They went through the six-year process, and now they're being supplanted by other projects that haven't even been on the STIP, and that, I think, is not fair.
But it'd be your understanding that those funds could be available, so it could be matched in a future year?
In the future, but again, it isn't fair for projects that have been on the STIP for 6 years to be taken off the list and not be considered by this committee when other projects that haven't even been gone through the process have leapfrogged and now are under consideration.
Thank you, Senator Hoffman, and I hope you share your frustration with the people responsible for that, not just this committee. Okay, we will, Senator Donald, Senator.
I think this points out one of the disappointments we've had in the STIP process over the last 6 years, where we've talked about it a lot of times. The process is probably unconstitutional the way it currently exists because it is driven by internal criteria adopted by the Department of Transportation, not by regulation or statutory criteria, which is required, as I read the court cases. So the entire process is probably unconstitutional and illegal, and this kind of last-minute changes points out the weaknesses of it. It's certainly a serious concern. There seems to be no other way to deal with the action the governor took, though, since the STIP is mandatory, compliance with the STIP is mandatory to access the federal funds, and to start with that as the starting point and then to back out from there. And it's even more complicated than that because some of the amendments were not Garvey bond driven. Some of the amendments were driven by just changes that DOT made, while others were clearly in anticipation of the Garvey bonds and utilizing those to replace those changes. So it's even a more complex question than that, and that's why the subcommittee is recommending that the full committee needs to deal with it. Simply from a technical aspect, it's going to take quite a bit of time to address what the changes the governor has proposed here. These were not recommendations of the subcommittee or the legislature. They were changes made by the governor.
Thank you for that. I am going to order a CS that will incorporate all of the recommendations of the subcommittee, and also that let finance use ADA dividend, HFC dividend first, and applying that before they use general funds. So with that, I'm going to go on to our next bill. We're going to take up Senate Bill 256. These Senate bills we've all heard before. It's my intention to adopt the CS and squirt them out of here. Senator Kelly, which version would you like to move? Which version is in front of us? Which version is 256? See, we're under I version. That is the right version?
Excuse me?
That is the right version?
Yeah.
Let me double check. I version, as amended, we took out the word geographic service areas. Is there a motion to move the bill?
Mr. Chairman, I would move Senate Bill 256. With accompanying fiscal note.
Motion to move version I, dated 4, dated 3/27/00, as amended, with accompanying fiscal note. Is there objection? There are none. Senate Bill 256 moved. Brings us next to House Senate Bill 301. This is a bill dealing with the dipnet fishery. Senator Wilkins, what's your pleasure today, sir?
Chairman, you have before you a TSK UTML 46. Asked the committee to adopt that. I didn't have an amendment to that CS having to do with the personal identification card permit.
You're welcome. Do you want to move your CS?
Move CS for Senate Bill 301, version K, UTML 46, be accepted as our working document.
Motion to adopt version K. Is there objection? Hearing none, version K is before us. Senator Wilkins.
Mr. Chairman, I move amendment number 2.
We have a motion to adopt amendment number 2. Would you just explain that real briefly?
Mr. Chairman, members have in their packet a memorandum of April 6th from Ledge Legal that explains what we're doing. This simply cleans up the language that allows someone with a personal identification card, i.e. senior citizen, to be required to have a permit but not to have to pay for the permit in order to fish at Chitna. It also sets forth that if a family member is in the company of the personal identification holder, that they can't fall under the personal identification holder's permit in order to fish at Chitna under the family permit provision of this bill.
Questions on amendment number 2? Is there objection to the adoption of amendment number 2? Hearing none, amendment number 2 has been adopted. We do have 6 or 8 people on teleconference. I'm going to limit your testimony. I wish when you come on, just tell me if you're in favor of the bill or opposed to the bill, and very briefly. And please stick to the timetable so I don't have to interrupt you. We've got a lot of bills on our schedule today. I'm going to start with Kevin Delaney in Anchorage.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Kevin Delaney, Director of the Division of Sport Fish with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and the department supports this bill, and I'm here as a resource in case you have any questions. Thank you.
Boom.
I'm in Fairbanks. I'm Vice President of the Chitna Defenders Association. We support this bill. We supported the original bill, which was a $10 fee that was made in 1984. It's worked successfully for 20 years. We've had hassle-free dip netting down there. We'd like to continue that. And at the present time, there's over 33,000 people go down there to dip net. And that creates a tremendous impact on the natives' land, which borders the river on both sides. So we would like to see this passed. But we'd also like you to make a legislative intent note that this money is to be used for access and not for any other purpose. The original permit was for access. The fact that we've paid for our services down there for the last 20 years does not eliminate the state's responsibility to provide those services, but we're not against paying for those at the present time, but still, this money should be for access. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This Fairbanks, Dick Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Dick Bishop, Vice President of the Alaska Outdoor Council. The Outdoor Council supports Senate Bill 301 as amended. We appreciate your work on the bill. Fishing starts as early as June 1, and this bill is needed to allow people to go fishing as they traditionally have. We do think that the related issues of access and other matters must be taken up in the next year by the administration and the legislature. And finally, if Senator Charlie Parr were still with us today, I think he'd be pleased to see that this is, again, a subsistence fishery in which Fairbanks and other Alaskans are entitled to participate. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mike Tinker.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, I am Mike Tinker, Chairman of the Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee, with over 10,000 constituents who participate in this fishery. There are two parts to the bill that we'd like to talk about. One is that we think it's an excellent idea to just change the name of it to the Chitna Dipnet fishery. That kind of gets lost and not qualified as what kind of fishery it is in the title. We think there are three points to the bill. There's a history that goes along with this that upsets some people paying trespass. The new agreement is it designed to cover a trespass that's by maybe three or four times as many users, and that the state does not have a very good situation in terms of the value for the trespass, but they did not have any basis to compare. We have some recommendations we're giving to the Fish and Game for what they should do in the future, realizing that the term of this agreement is very short, and we support this bill.
Thank you. Mary Bishop?
I support SB 301 as a Band-Aid for this year. People will generally comply if they know that you, the legislators, are taking action to cure the basic problem. To me, that means you must do something else with regard to letting the people know where the property is and possible RS-2477 access is determined. Pass this Band-Aid, but do something else, too, and be sure the public knows that the state is doing something substantial to solve the basic problem. Thank you.
Thank you. Mac Menard.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Mac Menard. I'm the Regional Supervisor for Sport Fish Division in Fairbanks. I want to extend our appreciation to Senator Wilkins' office and those of your committee for the efforts here. As Kevin Delaney's mentioned, we support the bill. We look at it as the best solution to some complex problems, and we recognize that it's attempting to maximize legal public access while minimizing conflicts between the users. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mac. Greg Malchik. I know I mispronounced that. Mac.
That's Greg Mahacek. Thank you for your time today and letting me testify in support of SB 301. I am a part-time charter boat operator down there on the Copper River, and I am a beneficiary of access to the river. I have, in the mid-90s, worked with Chitna Native Corporation to try and establish some communications on running a commercial business down there. I was the first person that ever approached them to work out an agreement, and of course they were falling all over themselves trying to, because of someone who's actually contacting them and understanding that they do have land ownerships down there, and as a beneficiary of that in a profitable way, I guess my constituency, which would be the dipnetters, would support the fee and the rest. If it's an increased restroom access, more cleaner restrooms, more dumpsters, I think it would be a more enjoyable place if it doesn't look like a dump like it does sometimes around O'Brien Creek area and Haley Creek. And again, I support this, and I thank you for your time.
Thanks, Greg. We'll go to Glenn Allen now. Joseph Hart.
Thank you. I represent the two corporations that this agreement was negotiated with, and I would have to say at this time that we support the main bill, but the understanding that we're going to give access to this to someone and not be compensated for the impacts that they're going to have on our properties would have to be given some serious consideration. We haven't yet looked into the entire issue, but for the most part, we do support it. We will have to rediscuss negotiations with the Fish and Game on the portion of the amendment allowing for the senior citizens to not pay for their access. In the contract that we signed, it does state that we would enter into negotiations with the state for a longer-term arrangement for the access, and that could be put on the table as part of a way to find a peaceful solution to that portion. But in general, the main bill we do support, we're questionable on the amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. And I think everyone knows that this is a one-year fix, so we're going to have to see how this works. And I think there's a lot of work that's going to come back before the legislature next year to straighten up some of this. That's all the people I have on testimony. Is there questions of the sponsor? Senator Wilkins, what would you like to do with this bill?
Chairman, I just move Senate Bill 301 be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
The motion to move 301 from committee with individual recommendations. Is there objection? Hearing none, 301 is out of here. Next, we'll do Senate Bill 271. This is another bill we heard a few times. Darwin? After hearing it yesterday, we had drafted another CS and incorporated the remarks and the
271.
Thanks on this bill. Well, Darwin, if you will first tell me what version that you're going to be reading off of and changing back to. I have so many versions in here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Darwin Peterson, staff to Senate Finance Committee. The most recent version is CS version H.
Okay.
Dated 4600. The three changes that we made as a result of the hearing on this bill yesterday. We're on page one. The definition of mobile food was further defined as one that serves only beverages and prepackaged food that are from an approved source and are not potentially hazardous. That would cover the espresso carts, which is what the committee's intent was. Now on page two, lines 17, 18, and 19, the buildings of the businesses that have more than one food establishment was further defined as more than one food establishment in one building that share the same kitchen. So if the bar and the restaurant share the same kitchen, they'd be charged one inspection fee if they have separate kitchens and they're separate inspections. On page three, the makeup of the food safety advisory group was changed on page three, lines six and seven. Instead of having the members of the advisory group selected by the commissioner of the DEC, the members are now selected by the Speaker of the House and the Senate President. Also on page 3, lines 14, 15, and 16, the Reg Review Committee will be responsible for staffing the Food Safety Advisory Group during the interim. And those are all the changes, Mr. Chairman. There's one change that I forgot to mention yesterday that was in the prior version and is also in this version, and that's on page 4, line 1. The effective date for sections 1 and 2 is January 1, 2001, by request of the Department. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any questions?
Other questions, Darwin? Senator Green.
Is there sort of an unwritten policy for that requires notification of the members of a group and the staff? Because if it's not, there's nothing in here that says everyone has to be notified that there's going to be a meeting. And I'm afraid that if some group got together and didn't advise the staff and then say, oh, well, Reg Review staff couldn't be there because they weren't notified.
I don't know of any other than open meetings law, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to have staff there. So
right.
The industry to get together and not invite the staff.
Staff, and then
I would imagine that they may get together on their own, and I hope they do. But when they come forward to make official recommendations, they need the staff from Reg Review to write them up and give them to us. So I'm not sure that's a.
Was that our only purpose in having staff from Reg Review there, so they could be the worker bee, repair the port?
Well, yeah, to be understand what they're talking about. But the industry meets all the time. I wouldn't expect Reg Review to follow them around. Anyway. What's your suggestion?
I have no idea. I was trying to figure out if there is an assumed notification process that, because if I were the Reg Review staffer, I would want to be at the meeting. and monitor them as they're, you know, and be involved with the formulation, not to impact it, but to hear what's going on. That's my only question.
Other questions? What is the will of the committee? Senator Lehman.
Move to adopt the committee's resolution.
Motion to adopt version H, 4600. Is there objection? Hearing none, that is the version.
Move to report.
Motion to move the bill out of committee, version H, with accompanying fiscal notes. Is there objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 271 moves. Senate Bill 259. Senate Bill 259 deals with an act relating to crimes and offenses relating to oral representation of recording access devices. We heard the bill yesterday. We were under version K. We are asked to consider version M that was laid down. We heard testimony on that version. I'm going to oppose the adoption of version M. I think it's something that needs to go back to the Judiciary Committee if we're going to take a leap of faith, or not a leap of faith, but if we're going to adopt that much broad sweeping changes.
I would concur.
Yes. So. Senator Phil.
Do we officially have M before us?
No. I'm just telling everybody.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
There's some elements of M that I support, and there's others that I think we need a lot more work on. I mean, I wish we could go through a process of identifying the more easily understandable, less controversial sections of the proposed add-ons, such as the 404B, I think is a good change.
Senator Donnelly, I'll hold the bill if you want to do it, but the committee doesn't have time to engage it all. But
yeah, I know, and this is all new to me yesterday.
If it's going to go get through the building, it needs to get out of here.
Yeah.
Pretty quick. It's up to you. I certainly would hold the bill if you'd like to review that.
Okay. Well, we hold the bill.
We'll set 259 aside.
What would your alternative plan was to send it back to the judiciary?
No. You can get it out of here. Let the House deal with it. Okay. Next, we have House Joint Resolution 56.
Oh, the judiciary resolution.
Representative Morgan, this is a resolution proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska prohibiting certain initiatives relating to wildlife. Representative Morgan, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm the prime sponsor of HJR 56, and if you look at the bill, it's a wide support. It's a bipartisan issue. I've introduced HJR 56 because the ballot initiative process in Alaska. I've looked at the last two initiative processes that happened, one in 1996 and the other in 1998, and both of those, unfortunately, were on the wolf issue. In 96, that process failed when it was brought to the voters through an initiative process. And that failed in 1998. That initiative passed. I looked real hard at 1996 initiative, and that was run in campaign by 30-second soundbites, which I then digged in further. A lot of those soundbites were untrue, false, were dealing with people's emotions and passion. And if you look at that poor wolf that's being chased down and being shot, in actuality, that was done by the Department of Fish and Game, that was done on a chopper, and what they were doing to that wolf here, darting that wolf with a sharp chopper. And pre-1996, if they didn't have Same Deer Airborne, but what they did, Same Deer Airborne was when they're flying around, they spot some wolves, they follow them, and then they had to land, find a place to land, get off the plane, and run 100 yards, then take a shot. I guess all of you have walked in the snow here. Try running. And then stop and take a third shot. Meantime, the group is still moving, and you're moving. Now, take two deep breaths and try to take a nice, good aim and shoot. If that's not fair, I don't know what is. I think we give that is fair. We're not alone in this initiative process. In 1998, UConn, Minnesota passed a constitutional amendment to protect wildlife management and hunting in their state. Presently, constitutional amendments to protect wildlife management and traditional wildlife uses are working their way through the state of Arizona. Matter of fact, Arizona does have a predator control that shoots coyotes from the plane. They're doing it now. They've done it before. They passed it again. Even though it's controversial, they've done it because it works. It protects their pronghorn. Their pronghorn antelope is in the best shape ever since they started this predator control. Idaho is working through it, and North Dakota. So you see, Alaska is not alone in this fight. On the animal rights groups, you know, I guess we all heard about the Muncher Randy Brooks being attacked by animal rights activists, being attacked to get AmeriGas to pull their sponsorship for Randy Brooks. They've never even looked at what the Alaskan Muncher has done. In 1998, Randy Brooks got the Humanitarian Award for Tusco 300. That was never brought up. It was all done by email. You email someone that gets no facts, all emotion, none. This is why I brought the initiative. And, you know, Barb, it always makes me wonder. If our father of the Iditarod had heard about this, I think he'd turn over in his sled. You know, there's a lot of advocates out there on the other side saying that I'm taking away the people's right to vote on this. In the contrary, Mr. Chairman, by putting this on the ballot, we are allowing all Alaskans to decide how wildlife should be managed in their state, the great state of Alaska. And another argument they put out is that hunters and trappers are only 20%. Of that 20%, we've got the native communities with, I don't know how much, what percent they make up. And if you look at the framers of our Constitution, both, I think, in the federal and the state, the reason we've got that Constitution is to protect the minority's freedom, religion, culture, and history. The Constitution is there to protect that minority view. It's not there to protect the majority. Yes, we've got majority rule, but that's the reason we fought this first great war here in the continental USA, to protect the minority view. We've got the threat that they, well, if one of the senators' bills that just passed the House, if that passed, that we're going to have an uproar that tourists are not going to come because of the wildlife. You know, there's the other side of the story that there's native communities out there. They also come and see those people. That's what makes Alaska unique. They come and see a thriving community, thriving history, thriving culture that's working, that depends on wildlife and hunting, that teams depend. They come and see that. With the wildlife and the culture, the tourists come to see the wildlife. If you see a good example, a perfect example of that is the Native Heritage Center in Anchorage. That's beginning to be a big tourist attraction. People are going to come. The threat, yes, we've got threats. And people are going to specify behind me, and if I may, Mr. Chairman, should I be some of these people that supported HDR 56. We got the Alaska Native Harbor Seal Commission, Canada, Peace, Conference, Alaska Trappers Association, Alaska Trappers Association Sound Central Chapter, Alaska Outdoor Council, Coalition for Alaska Way of Life, Foundation for North American Wild Sheep, Scientific Management of Alaska's Resource Treasury, Alaska Wildlife Society, and in the Alaska Wildlife Society, we've got over 300 professional biologists working for the state of Alaska and also the federal government are for this. So, just to give you an idea, if somebody comes from the department to testify against it, ask him if he's a member or his membership are members of Alaska Wildlife Society. We've got Eastern and Western Interior Subsistence Advisory Council. This is the federal side. Those two councils are in favor. Also, the Association of Village Council Presidents and numerous other traditional councils that I'm not going to mention because the list goes on. We've got bilateral support on both sides. And I ask for your support and passing this bill out.
Thank you, Representative Morgan. Questions? Senator Phillips.
Mr. Morgan, can you supply me the copy of the Utah and Minnesota's constitutional amendment?
Yes, I just have to have that. Idaho.
No, just Utah and Minnesota.
You need a copy of it.
Here, Utah and Minnesota?
Yeah.
Okay, got one of Utah here.
Other questions or requests of the sponsor? Seeing none, we'll go to public testimony. First, let's bring the department up. Jaron Bruce, do you want to testify on this? Then we'll go to, we will start in Bethel when we finish with the testimony here, and James Berlin, Jr. will come to you as soon as the department finishes testifying. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jaron Bruce from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. House Joint Resolution 56 proposes to amend Alaska's Constitution to prohibit its citizens from enacting laws dealing with the harvest and management of wildlife through the initiative process. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game cannot support this proposal because it fails to recognize that there is more to the management of the public's wildlife resources than the application of science and technical expertise. Wildlife management must also consider and respond to the values held by the public about how they want their wildlife managed. The role of scientific wildlife management is to achieve the goals and objectives desired by the Alaskan people for the conservation and utilization of their wildlife resources. There are usually many options for wildlife management that are all biologically sustainable and therefore consistent with the sustained yield principle. The principle that achieving the maximum human harvest of big game is always the highest and best use of big game is not a scientific matter, it's a public policy matter. Like many public policy issues, there are differing views on it. The initiative process is the most direct way the public sorts out its views on public policies. Taking it away is not something the department can support. Wildlife management does involve scientific and special expertise, but so does the administration of many other public functions. Education, public health, and transportation planning are all complex subjects involving the application of special training and expertise to manage and conduct the respective programs effectively. There appears to us no reason to single out wildlife management as a subject too complex for the public to make policy decisions about through the initiative process. Finally, it's worth remembering that a law enacted by initiative can be amended by the legislature immediately if there's some error in it or if it brings about some unanticipated consequence that is injurious to the public or to the wildlife resources. After only 2 years, the legislature may repeal it entirely if the legislature believes that it is an inappropriate policy for the state of Alaska. Given these checks and balances to the initiative process, there is little risk that a poor initiative will cause any lasting harm to Alaska's wildlife. Removing wildlife management issues from the reach of the initiative process will lead to more conflict, we believe, rather than less. Removing the ability of the public to directly express their views about wildlife through the initiative process will lead to public cynicism and anger, we believe. It will make the job of wildlife management harder, not easier. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions? There are none. We will go to teleconference in Bethel. James Berlin, Jr., please.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. For the record, my name is James Berlin, Jr. I'm the resource specialist for ABCP Incorporated, representing 56 villages and a quarter of Alaska's tribes. I was directed to voice ABCP's support on HGR 56 by our president, Myron Anning, this morning. Proper management of our resources require a fine balance, which cannot be implemented by a balanced initiative process. Historically, our forefathers sustained this balance by having wildlife management taken care of and by proper leaders who are direct users of the resources, who had insight to the conditions of their population, habitat, and harvested their wildlife accordingly. By harvesting their wildlife in a sound balance and only taking what was to be used without wasting edible portions of their harvest. We support this amendment for these historical and sound balanced reasons, and the public's input is already considered and implemented by the Board of Fish and Board of Game process, which the state biologists and managers use. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Berlin. We will go to Beryl. I lost the name. Ben Hobson.
Good morning. My name is Ben Hobson, Jr., Chairman for Coalition for the Alaskan Way of Life. We're a diverse coalition of many Native organizations, sportsmen, trappers, hunters, from both rural and urban Alaska. My comments to HGR 56 are outside interests are managing our renewable resources with their money and emotional interests from animal rights groups that only want to see total elimination, hunting and trapping throughout the U.S. and including Alaska. This game is being played through the ballot initiative process. Our renewable resources are not to be played around through a popular vote as citizens throughout Alaska depend on this game for their livelihood. Wildlife needs to be exempt from the initiative process for these reasons. In the past two elections, Alaskans have seen animal rights initiatives that can have lasting effect, uncomprehensible to hunters, trappers, rural and urban people, village trappers, and urban sportsmen. Within these past two elections, Native Alaskans, hunters, trappers, and other consumptive users have had to foot the bill fighting an expensive battle just to remain status quo about our livelihood. In my view, our wildlife is best managed by Alaska's professional on wildlife, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Many of these people spend their career specializing in this complicated section of the ecosystem. Management of wildlife is not to be chanced by emotional voting, sound science and professional management techniques are needed, not political agendas and emotions. I therefore urge the Senate Finance Committee to strongly pass HGR 56 in its present form. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hobson, for your testimony. We'll go to Matt Sue. We have one in Matt Sue, then we'll go to Fairbanks, and the remaining testifiers are all in Fairbanks. So, Rod Arnold.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Rod Arnold from Palmer. I've been a guide in Alaska for the last 35 years and spent the last 10 years dealing with animal rights activists. And if our framers of our Constitution back in 56 had known that the civil liberation, the human rights movement in the 60s would end up being an animal rights activist charge in the 70s, which tried to equate the moral rejection of racism to a rejection of death dealing between species, they would have surely had the exemption of wildlife to the initiative process in our Constitution. It's a fact that the anti-hunter animal rights groups are the ones that use the initiative process, and I see no reason to legitimize their stance. It's not in the best interest of Alaskans to use the initiative process. We've got a clear example in the same-day airborne initiative that passed prohibiting same-day airborne wolf hunting. Good example, Game Management Unit 13 historically
harvest of 1,000 moose could come out of there. Now that population is declining. It won't be achievable, so the sustained yield principle of our Constitution was certainly violated. The Same Day Airborne Initiative blocked the current public process that we have, which is a process of over 80 statewide advisory committees. And on those 80 advisory committees, they, by Administrative Process Act, are put there if they are well informed on fish and game resources and are local residents. It's a must that they have the knowledge and the experience of the local wildlife resource. And in rural areas today, there's 84 communities that are represented in this process with over 540 representatives. And these people are all placed on the advisory board by a public vote. So to the contrary, that the public's opportunity to vote is being restricted, that if people want to participate in this process and have the experience and knowledge, they can certainly participate and be voted into position on these advisories. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Fairbanks, we'll start with Dan Bloom, and after Dan will be Dick Bishop. Okay. Okay, go ahead, Dick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Dick Bishop of the Last Outdoor Council, and I am testifying on behalf of the council in favor, strongly in favor of HDR 56. We really appreciate Representative Morgan's and other legislators' efforts to put this issue forward in the legislature. Contrary to popular press reports, it's not a question of ignoring the public's interest, but responding to the interests that have been raised to our neighbors from all around the state. Ballot box biology is not the way to manage wildlife. That's what it boils down to. And that's what we have increasingly with the use of the initiative process in wildlife management. It's a trend nationally, and it's a trend that's catching on here. It's a technique that does a couple things. As you've heard, it subverts the or does an end run around the board process, which is a very good process. In fact, it's looked up to across the country. And it tries to impose the values of anti-hunters, anti-management, anti-trappers, people, their values on all Alaskans to the detriment of our way of life. Representative Morgan is right. It is incumbent on the state to protect Alaskans of diverse values from the tyranny of the majority. And that appears to include, in this case, based on previous testimony, the current administration, as well as some of the most prominent newspapers in the state. So we strongly urge you to pass HDR 56. There is no shortage, as you have heard, of opportunity for not only sound scientific wildlife management, but for the input of the public in developing policy and a rational management regime for wildlife. So please pass this resolution. We appreciate very much your efforts. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll stay in Fairbanks, but Mr. Sater, I know you're in Anchorage. I had a list buried here, so we will go to Anchorage and pick up your testimony before we finish. So, Mike Tinker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, on behalf of the Fairbanks Advisory Committee, the HB 66, or the resolution, is very important to us, and all I want to say this morning for brevity is that we fully support it and urge your acceptance.
Thank you. Mary Bishop?
Yes, Mary Bishop from Fairbanks. There's an old saying, don't watch sausage or legislation being made. But I can tell you when it comes to making laws, far worse is watching law being made by misleading 30-second TV ad. Yes, this is a loss of my right to use the initiative process, but I am supporting the representative form of government. I have to balance two risks. The risks of lower 48 very wealthy animal rights and anti-hunting interests pushing through their anti-hunting agenda using misleading advertising and the ballot box biology process. I balance that risk against the risk that I would want to change via the initiative process wildlife legislation that our state elected leaders passed that's against the interests of hunters or trappers. I believe my risk is far greater that the wealthy animal rights organizations in the lower 48 will impact my rights. Thank you. Please support HJ 56.
Thank you. Joe Matty.
Chairman Torgensen, members of the Senate Finance Committee, my name is Joe Matty, and I'm here to testify in favor of HJR 56. Ballot initiatives that are promoted and financed by lower 48 animal rights organizations are not the way to manage Alaska's wildlife resources. The legislature, with the Alaska Board of Game and the Fish and Game Advisory Committees, give all Alaskan citizens a voice in how to manage our wildlife. This is the best system. Let's let Alaskans in November decide how to best manage our game. We can do a better job without the interference of outside animal rights organizations. Alaskans can work together to return our state to its former abundant wildlife population. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. Greg.
Greg Mahacik, and again, I'll be brief like Mr. Tinker. We do have three Fairbanks Fish and Game Advisory Committee members here. I am also one of them, and I believe that is the proper process to follow is what's set up through the Constitution, which most other states do not have. People come up here from lower 48, and they can't believe that the public can be that involved with wildlife management as it is here in the state. Formerly from Minnesota 20 years ago, and we couldn't do it. DNR told us what regs were. We did not tell DNR what the regs should be. And again, I think the only thing people who benefit from the this particular type of ballot box biology are the people who get paid to sit out there and give out misinformation and to get someone to sign, put their name on a page to be counted as a number, and they get paid to do this. And I don't think that's the way to manage wildlife. And again, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Pete Buse.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to support HJR 56. I'm Pete Buse. I'm president of the Alaska Trappers Association, and we don't feel that it's fair or right to expect Alaskans, especially some of the poorest Alaskans, to have to raise $300,000 or so every 2 years to fight off initiatives brought on and financed by huge outside animal rights groups. While it has only started a few years ago here in Alaska, an onerous pattern is becoming obvious. A small group of in-state activists file a petition, which soon becomes a fundraising tool for outside anti-hunting and anti-trapping groups. Compared to other states, Alaska is an excellent place for these multinational groups to get the big bang for their buck. It's a money-making proposition for them, but it's gradually costing us our way of life. We would point out, like others, that Alaska currently has the most open and democratic process of any state in the U.S. for crafting wildlife law and regulation. Our legislature and the Board of Game have consistently made and modified wildlife-related law in a responsible manner for years. It's worked just fine. It can continue to do so. We're not asking you to circumvent the process. We're asking you to return wildlife management to the open public process that it once was and can be again. We believe that Alaska's wildlife is simply too important to all Alaskans to be managed on the basis of a series of sound bites and popular votes. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to Anchorage and Neilan Taylor, please.
Yes, I'm Neilan Taylor. I was chair of Alaskans Against Snaring Wolves. I'm here to speak against HJR 56. We disbanded, so I'm not technically here on their behalf. I've run for the legislature, and I've served in several community organizations. I've lived up here 25 years. My wife and children are all from Alaska, born and raised, and I believe some of you know me. In putting together that Wolf Snare initiative, I frequently argued among all Alaskans, you know, who are on our committee, no outsiders, I frequently argued that we should put our trust in democracy, that we should trust the voter, and win or lose, democracy is our friend. If HJR is passed, this is a real slap in the face to people such as myself. It is also a slap in the face to the large numbers of Alaskans who voted for these initiatives, 58% in 1996 and 36% in 1998. And I'd like to point out that actually there are three wildlife initiatives over the last several years. The first was in 94, and it had to do with sport fishing. And one of the interesting things about this proposed amendment is it does not cover fish. And I think that's simply a political move. I mean, basically you're saying it's okay to have initiatives on fishing issues, but not okay to have initiatives on four-legged animals and on birds. And I think it's pure politics at the heart of that. But the slap-in-the-face idea is, I think, the really important one. You know, what will our supporters, that 36 or 58%, how many it is, think about the fact that the Alaska legislature thinks it's okay to bring initiatives which would legalize marijuana and cocaine, or it's okay to bring initiatives that would effectively prohibit native languages in this state, or initiatives that would set a minimum wage. But at the same time, we the voters are not smart enough, not bright enough, to voice our views on four-legged animals and on birds. Okay, on fish, I guess. One of my bosses years ago was Cliff Groh, and I regarded him as a mentor, an important mentor of mine. As you know, he served as a senator and subsequently devoted much of his life to public service. He taught me, and I clearly remember, because it made a big impression, that in life and many of these things, you need to think like a game of chess. You need to think beyond the next move, or beyond today to the next move and the move after that, as far ahead as you can. I urge you to focus ahead a little bit. I understand that there are those who would like to not have ballot initiatives, but I'd like you to look ahead. First to the election in 2000. This needs to be passed by voters in the state. In 1998, a national organization led by a former NRA lobbyist named Fred Meyer, same as the store, he acted as a coordinating force and source of money for sportsmen's groups here in Alaska. The opposition to our initiative was paid for by outside sportsmen's groups. They channeled about $250,000 in. There was some Alaska contribution, but most of their money came from outside. Most of our money came from outside, too, but we were kicked off the ballot by Judge Buist for from May until September. We didn't know we'd have an election until mid-September in 1998. And at that point, we really had nowhere to go except outside for money, and we did. Fred Meyer's group pumped, I've been told, and I understand, $3 million ballot initiative in Ohio. And $750,000 into a ballot initiative in Utah. And you know, there's big money, and it's all outside those states. And they're spending a lot of money on mourning doves, of all things. Here in the year 2000, I expect that this will be the only ballot initiative or the only election issue directly affecting wildlife. And I expect these sportsmen's groups to pump something like $1 million into this election. I'm serious. We on our side will do our best to counter that, and in most of these elections, our side is vastly outspent by these sportsmen's groups, roughly 10-1 in Ohio and Utah. We'll do our best, but I think basically what you're looking at is an election regarding Alaska's constitution that involves overwhelmingly outside money on both sides, and I think that's something you don't want. The state doesn't want. I also think that, you know, we need to go back to this chess analogy and say, well, what happens if the sportsmen's groups do win? Let's say this is passed, and there are no more ballot initiatives regarding wildlife in the state. Well, first of all, the state will have earned a lot of bad press, locally and nationally. And I think that bad press will make it difficult for our congressional delegation to advocate meritorious Alaskan issues, such as opening ANWR. I'm pro-development. I think wildlife watching and responsible game management is good for the state of Alaska. I think it promotes economic development. But I think if we develop a reputation as being a place that does not like wildlife viewing, if we develop our state as a place where only hunters are welcome, I think we hurt ourselves. I think Alaska prospers, grows, does well as a place where all people are respected and the views of all people are respected. And we have a reputation for that. What you're really doing here is shutting off one small segment of this population. Incidentally, we have a lot of public support out there. And And finally, I think that, you know, that 35 to 58% that supports us on these things will become increasingly angered and increasingly alienated from the state. I was one of those 17% who voted in favor of your plan to use permanent funding money to support state government. I think government is good. I support government. But, I mean, can you expect Alaskans who feel strongly on wildlife issues to support taxes if that's the way we have to go, or to give up portions of their permanent fund dividends if you pass a constitutional amendment that tells them that some of the issues they're interested in are off limits because they're not bright enough, they're not smart enough to deal with them? Finally, I want to say I came here not because I fear the outcome of the election. I don't. I think, you know, these groups, the sportsmen groups, are shooting themselves in the foot on this one. But I want to come here and make the record that at least we tried. At least I said something. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to go and comment. I think that the testifier brought up something that is of value to discuss maybe a little bit later on. And he said that his money was from outside and that the people that were opposing it, their money was from outside. And I think it kind of punctuates the problem that we have, is that Alaska is a bit unique in that you can cover a great amount of the state for a lot less money than you can in other states. And so it is a lot easier to affect your agenda through the ballot box if you are an outside group. So here we are, and I think he just brings attention to the fact that outside groups are fighting over our way of life. I don't think it's that great of an idea, and we have a system that allows them to do that.
Thank you, Senator Kelly. Here in Juneau, we have for short testimony is Sue Schrader. And this will conclude our public testimony.
Thank you, Chairman Ferguson, committee members. And I will try to keep this quite short. My name is Susan Schrader. I am the conservation advocate for Alaska conservation voters. ACA and ACV represent over 40 member organizations and businesses. We have about a membership of about 22,000 registered Alaskan voters. We have consistently opposed any efforts to restrict our constitutional rights with the initiative process, and therefore, of course, we are opposed to this resolution. If the influence of outside money is the concern, and certainly all of the previous testimony today would suggest that, then why are we restricting Alaskans' rights to address that issue? Taking away our rights under the Constitution is not going to solve the problem of outside money. Perhaps we ought to be looking more carefully at some campaign finance reform legislation rather than amending our Constitution and restricting Alaskans' rights. The initiative process has not been abused, despite what, again, many testifiers may lead you to believe. Of the 29 initiatives that have appeared on ballots since statehood, only two, plus the one that I learned about this morning dealing with sportfish, have dealt with wildlife. And as you well know, of those two that dealt with non-fish wildlife, only one passed. This is hardly an abuse of the initiative system. I've heard a lot of a discussion about our values in Alaska, and I have some very strong values about why I live here and how I respect the other folks that live in Alaska. And as far as I'm concerned, my value system cannot be swayed by a 30-second TV ad. And I really think it's unfair to Alaskans to suggest that voters can have their value system easily swayed by TV or radio ads. Nor is there anything particularly more difficult or particularly more scientific about wildlife management issues than many of the other issues that the public needs to address, including simply the election of our representatives. So again, the question is, why is wildlife being singled out? In conclusion, I don't think either the Alaska Constitution, our wildlife, or Alaskan voters are going to benefit from this restriction. Our Constitution, sustained yields, and multiple use provisions have served us very well over the 45 years. I have heard folks testifying on this issue saying, well, but the framers, that was 45 years ago, that was a different time, a different place, and different people. Well, one thing that doesn't change is should be our respect for our democratic rights. And surely what should not change is any diminishment of these rights under the Constitution. So by removing the check that the initiative process provides for legislative action, Alaskans are being asked to restrict our own rights. And in turn, we're giving this legislature more power to deal with wildlife issues, which have always been highly contentious. We feel that this restriction of our rights will do little to facilitate a more reasoned policy-making and decision-making process over wildlife. If this amendment goes through, believe me, it's not going to help calm down some of the rhetoric over wildlife management. And it certainly is not going to benefit wildlife or all of us Alaskans who value and depend on this resource. Thank you.
Thank you. As I said, that concludes our public testimony. Is there discussion on the resolution? Senator Green, Senator Phillips, and Senator Kelly.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, someone, and I don't even remember who it was talking to me about the downside to this particular type initiative, and ask about if this posed a limitation on anything to do with limited entry. And I didn't know. I don't know. Do you know if anyone is, maybe the sponsor or his staff might have an answer to that? As being one of those areas of, quote, that might rise in importance in the initiative process. And I don't know if that.
Not the question to the, or the answer to that.
Okay. And thank you.
I'm not sure the sponsor is here anymore or his staff. To run down to the floor. Senator Lehman, can you answer that question?
Mr. Chairman, I can answer the question. There is no limited entry for the taking of wildlife, so the answer is no. But Mr. Taylor did raise a good point, one that I think has merit, in that it probably makes sense to add fish to this as well as wildlife, because the management of fish at the ballot box is no more appropriate than the management of wildlife. In my opinion, I think it's just as dangerous. I think that ought to be done by a very iterative board process. Whether or not we agree with the eventual results, it makes more sense to do that. So, in my opinion, Mr. Taylor raised a very good point.
Okay, we'll have to find that question.
Thank you. And staff has given me something to kind of respond to the previous testimony. And reminded me, there's no constitutionally valid method of restricting outside spending, people from the outside spending money on our initiatives in Alaska, and it's the free speech issue. In fact, there have been there was a court decision I think last year that even made it even broader and wider, and that you don't even have to be a resident to be involved in it, nor do you have to identify yourself. So,
but I understand.
Yeah, and that's pretty dismal as far as I'm
cases,
concerned.
But my understanding is the same as what you said.
So it's pretty open to who can impact our initiative process.
Senator Phillips.
You answered my question. So constitutionally, we cannot limit the spending on initiatives.
Not from outside. That's just
what. Well, no, it's any limit, whether inside or outside.
Well, I'm not
put
sure.
A total.
Oh, I don't think you
a total limit, say $100,000 per. Per group or anything like
no.
that?
I wouldn't think so.
Beach.
First of all.
Well, do we have a legal opinion from our...
Yeah, Buckley versus Vallejo, United
yeah,
States
no,
Supreme Court.
That.
Fortunately, we fall under that.
Senator Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, excuse me, Senator Phillips.
Yes, yes.
Mr. Chairman, the reason I asked for the Constitution for Utah, the way this proposed Constitution amendment is a total prohibition of the initiative process dealing with wildlife. Utah's constitution, which they passed, allows for two-thirds of the voters to make a decision on wildlife. So that's the difference between this proposed constitution and Utah's. And I haven't seen Minnesota's yet. The proposed constitutional amendment for Arizona has the same provision, at least two-thirds of the votes cast on the proposition. So there is about a one-third difference between what's being proposed and what's had passed in the other states. The other question I have is, you probably can't answer that right now, but I would be curious to see how much money was spent on both sides of the issues in 98 and 96 from the outside. I was unaware that Fred Meyer, my impression was that almost all this money was from outside, and I like to see the dollar total spent in and outside the state on both sides of the wildlife issues.
Thank you. Senator Kelly?
Mr. Chairman, there was a couple of points that were brought up in testimony that I think need to be addressed. I support the initiative, and I remind people that in many states, they don't have initiative processes for anything. You can't bring anything to the ballot that would normally be confined to the legislatures. But we don't necessarily have to do it the way they do it outside. But I think with wildlife, one of the reasons you can set it aside and say it's a little more special there's a couple of reasons, actually. One is that there's no question about it that the animal rights and environmental extremists are coming after Alaska, and they truly want to change our way of life. They want to turn this into a park. I don't think there's anybody here that would at this table that would question that. Second of all, the results of a mistake at the ballot box are a little more dramatic with wildlife. I go back to the 1996 initiative. I don't claim one way or the other whether people knew what they were voting on or not. That's not necessarily the issue. The fact is that I don't think they understood the consequences. I don't think I understood the consequences at the time, that we would have such a dramatic problem in rural Alaska, and now even a little bit urban. The wolves are beginning to come in around Anchorage and whatnot. There was a woman that was chased the other day. She was walking her dog. And you can't necessarily understand the consequences, and that's why we have the Board of Game and the Advisory Council, because they can discuss these things, they can have an open debate, they can change things. But whatever's on the ballot box is on the ballot box. You vote up or down, and it's pretty hard to predict a few years out what might happen. The problem with it, as I said, is that wildlife is a little more sensitive to these issues. Is in McGrath, we find that bringing that herd back will take 10 years, and that's 10 years to get it back to minimums. We have that testimony in this committee on a number of occasions from people on both sides of the issue that said it will take 10 years to bring McGrath back to minimums of about 2,500 animals. So we can't necessarily turn these kinds of things over to outside groups who are terribly well-funded. The Defenders of the Wildlife, the balance sheet here, it looks like in 1998 they had about $15 million of revenue. And as somebody said, they use these kinds of issues, particularly in Alaska, to raise money throughout the United States. And it becomes a big fundraising deal. As a matter of fact, I don't really see any use for environmental or animal rights groups other than to raise money and to provide income for executive directors and to influence elections. In 1996, I think it was, and then again in 98, or it might have been 94 and 96, something like that, I had people come to my door with a ballot initiative. And then once down here, down by McDonald's, I had someone approach me with a ballot initiative. And I told them I wasn't going to sign it, but I wanted to know where they were from. In each case, they were college students from colleges in Oregon. And this was their big thing. They were coming up to Alaska in the summer, and they were going to work to get names on a ballot. They had no idea about our way of life. They had absolutely no idea of what the initiative did. And frankly, they were saying things about the initiative that weren't true. But a 20-year-old college student with stars in her eyes is going to come up here and try to impact Alaskan politics, Alaskan policy, and Alaska way of life. I don't like it, and I think there are arguments to be made on either side, and I respect some of the arguments that come on the other side of this issue about denying people the process to petition. But the fact remains, outside groups are coming for this state, and they found a chink in our armor, and the chink is the ballot initiative. And Ms. Strand, who I have a great deal of respect for, I think she always presents herself very well in testimony, but her group, the Alaska Conservation Voice, spent almost $70,000 in the last 7 days of the last election cycle. They spent almost $70,000, which I would think, if what she says is the 30-second soundbite, don't influence public policy, then they wasted their money. They should have given that money to the executive director. The other one thing I wanted to say was wildlife viewing. This is a ruse. Wildlife viewing in these arguments is irrelevant, because what they're talking about always is viewing wolves. I've been up here all my life. Most of you have too. How many wolves have you seen? Darn few.
Backyard.
Yeah, darn few. Backyard?
Literally.
Your backyard? I told you this.
The problem.
The gun. Go ahead, Senator Kelly.
But Fluffy's inside.
But you know, my father-in-law came up here this summer. He's from North Carolina. And we took him on a drive, and fortunately, we took him on a drive where the wolves haven't eaten all the moose. And we saw lots of moose. And he was thrilled. And I don't care if you feed every moose in Alaska to the wolves, which is what apparently this administration and many of these groups want to do. My father-in-law still isn't going to see a wolf. I don't care how many wolves there are, because they don't just hang out in ponds eating passively. So the idea that somehow we're going to lose all these opportunities of tourism because we're not going to have wildlife viewing, the exact opposite is true. Because if you feed the moose to the wolf, you're not going to see the wolf or the moose. And that's what people come up here to see. They don't check off on their list, oh, I'm coming to Alaska to see a wolf. They come up here because they want to see wildlife. And currently we're feeding our wildlife to the wolves. And the other thing is tourism boycott. The people of outside are perfectly welcome to come up here and spend all the money they want. They are, however, not welcome to get involved in our public policy decisions or our natural resources decisions.
Other discussion on HJR 56? Senator Green.
I just want to say, I find it interesting that we're told in the discussion against this issue that you can always come back and change after the two-year period the initiative language and the impact it had on the legislation. Well, we've seen what's happened in the fight, just how people have been wrongly accused of going against the people's will in their previous vote because something was found wrong in initiative issues. You cannot have that both ways. We have to figure out the proper way, and I'm tempted to think that this is it.
Mr. Are we passing this out again? Oh, so I can't get an answer to my question on the outside money being spent.
Both sides. I wouldn't know where to get that right now anyway.
Go to the internet and find out how much outside money is being spent.
Well, I don't have the information. I wouldn't even know where to ask. But maybe the internet. Mm-hmm. Other discussion? The will of the committee? Kelly.
Mr. Chairman, I would move HJR 56. From committee with individual recommendations as well as the accompanying system.
Motion to move. Is there objection?
Yes.
Roll call, please.
Senator Lehman?
Yes.
Senator Adams? Senator Wilkins?
Yes.
Senator Kelly?
Yes.
Senator Green?
Yes.
Senator Phillips?
No.
Senator Donnelly?
Yes.
Senator Parnell?
Yes.
Senator
Ferguson? Yes. 7 yeas, 1 nay. So by a 7-1 vote, HJR 56 moves to committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes. We have about 9 people on teleconference and about 10 here, and I will get to all that. So just very brief. Next bill we have up is House Bill 272. Had this scheduled several times and they have not taken public testimony or the sponsor's testimony. Well, we will do that today. I will not be passing this bill out today, but I do want to go through the list and get everybody on. So I know we have a lot of people here, and I'd appreciate it if to keep your comments brief. We'll be called to the floor at a quarter till, and we generally stay until about 5 till. So go ahead, introduce yourself and give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Lack. I work on staff to Representative Andrew Halcrow, who represents the Sand Lake area of Anchorage. Obviously, he's in session right now, and I apologize for him not being here. HB 272 would set into state law a formula for assessing federally qualified low-income housing. Until 1998, local governments throughout the state of Alaska were assessing low-income housing based on its federally restricted rental income, taking into consideration deed restrictions and other covenants on the properties that are required by the federal government. 1998, the municipality of Anchorage changed its formula for assessing its low-income housing. The formula is now based on the market value of these units without consideration of deed restrictions. Unfortunately, because these units have deed restrictions on the amount of rent they can charge, the nonprofit organizations who sponsor these housing units cannot raise rents to compensate for the increase in property taxes. In some cases, the increase in property taxes through the difference in assessment has been over 100%. This places these low-income housing units in jeopardy. This also places all units throughout Alaska at risk. Banks statewide are refusing to finance these projects anywhere in the state without a uniform taxation policy. Additionally, here in the city and borough of Juneau has tried to change its assessment policy in the past. Fortunately, the nonprofits in the city of Juneau were successful in their appeals to the local boards of equalization. The threat to low-income housing is out there. There is a standard approved by the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisers Practices, and that is the standard that the HB 272 provides for. All other local governments throughout the state of Alaska are currently assessing low-income housing based on their deed-restricted rental income. While all communities are affected by the Municipality of Anchorage policy, Anchorage is the only city affected by this legislation because other communities properly assess their readily qualified low-income housing. We need to support low-income housing projects. Most of the rental housing in Alaska was built during the pipeline days and targets single men and single women. We now have more small families looking for housing. Low-paying service industry jobs are replacing high-wage oil field jobs and now require the support of affordable housing initiatives. Other states like Washington, Oregon, and California and Hawaii have all exempted low-income housing from all local property taxes. HB 272 does not go that far. This bill only requires the assessor take into consideration the rent restrictions that are on these properties. HB 272 fulfills the need for affordable housing, and I would, and Representative Paltrow asks the members to support the bill. And I'm available for any questions.
Questions of the sponsor staff? There are none. Thank you. I'm just going to roll down the list. Robin Gilchrist.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Robin Gilchrist. I'm the president of Housing First, and we are a Juneau-based nonprofit housing development organization, and we're in support of this bill. We have 21 units of low-income housing that we built with tax credits. Each year we have to appeal our assessment. Our assessment is based on a market value system rather than a rent-restricted system. And so we're asking you to support this bill so that each year we can look forward to a fair assessment of our properties. Are there any questions?
There are none. Thank you for joining us. Dan Fowski. I have, for those on teleconference, I've got three more here in Juneau, then we'll go to teleconference. So we'll start in Anchorage when we wrap up here. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dan Fowski. I'm CEO of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I'll be brief. I speak in support of the bill and the concept of trying to level the playing field for these programs and projects. The corporation has approximately $58 million statewide invested in low-income housing tax credits. I think we need to consider the fact that these groups are filling a valuable void in the communities, and that they're not asking for a complete exemption on the taxes. They're asking that we allow ourselves to take into consideration restrictions placed on these properties by the federal government as to what the rents are allowed to be charged. So I think this is a valuable tool that we use to round out the housing market in our cities and in rural areas with HUD taking the position that it has on zero growth for public housing units being built, and moving more to the Section 8 voucher and certificate program along with low-income housing tax credits. I think we need to be cognizant that this is going to be a way or a tool that we can use to ensure that there are monies available to try and build these units. And working on our federal legislation, both our senators have co-signed and co-sponsored bills that are currently working their way through the federal system to increase the allocation for the state of Alaska on the amount of low-income housing tax credits that are brought into the state. And I think that we harm ourselves by not creating a fair or a level playing field for developers. At the same time, we're trying to increase the amount of money that we get into the state to help build these projects. And thank you.
Senator Donnelly.
Dan, you're very knowledgeable in this area. I just wanted to explore some of the public policy ramifications of this. So, just an ordinary low-income family in Anchorage, struggled all their life, saved money, bought their own little house. Maybe it's a little two-bedroom house, right? Maybe they built it themselves out of pocket, right? They do have a mortgage on it. They're paying a higher rate than people in rural areas because we charge less in rural areas for mortgage rates through your program. So they're already subsidizing rural areas, or I mean, if not subsidizing rural areas, and they're very urban rural areas, some of them are rather, you know, small cities even are exempt, right? And